The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway live on this Thanksgiving Eve. I made my first trip to National Airport, Reagan National Airport, since the beginning of the virus, where the traffic was a nightmare last night at about 9 p.m. And I'm glad to see traffic be a nightmare at airports again. I know some of you have had crazy traffic before, and got a shout out to Ben that our camera's going a little bit crazy inside the studio here, Ben, flashing back and forth, so I don't know what to do about that. But in any event, I hope you're watching on the Salem News Channel, and just pick one or both of the settings if it's flashing back and forth on you. Yeah, the Salem, it's not fine on mine, it's driving me crazy. I don't know what it is, but we'll turn down that thing and I won't be able to see it. There, that's better. The deal with the airport traffic is normalcy is coming back, and I am so happy about that. So all of you, safe travel today. We had Genghis Kate arrive. I'm using John Kerry's pronunciation, Genghis. Most of you will say Genghis Kate arrive late last night. And at our house, it's bedlam because she was awake until 4 in the morning because she's 2. The Scholar and the Artful Dodger crashed immediately. So their havoc will begin when I return from today. And that's just grand. That's what Thanksgiving is. It's full of havoc. But let me do the rundown for you to bring up to speed on what happened overnight. Sadly, a sixth victim has died. This one, a child of the SUV murderous rampage in Wisconsin on Sunday. The stories of these victims are absolutely heartbreaking. In the New York Times this morning, everything went black. The children caught in a Christmas parade tragedy. Yuritsi Mercera Montez, 11, was home from the hospital Tuesday, struggling to walk, suffering from head injuries. She's now beginning to remember being struck by the SUV that killed 6 people, injured more than 60 others, as it raced through a Christmas parade in Waukesha, Wisconsin. I was dancing this Hannah Montana song, rocking around the Christmas tree, and then I was hit hard and everything went black. When I woke up, everything felt like a dream. Her friend, Jessica Torres, 11, had been dancing behind her with the Waukesha Extreme Dance Team, remained in intensive care unit of the hospital, one of at least a half dozen children in that dancing group to be badly injured. 3 of the dancing grannies died, and we will learn more about the other victims. On Tuesday evening, the family of Jackson Sparks, 8, said the brain surgery he had undergone on Sunday after the parade had failed to save him. He was the 6th person, the only child thus far, to die in the tragedy. The defendant has been arraigned. He sobbed crocodile tears. As evidence grows, he knew what he was doing and just zipped through it madly, indifferent to the pain and suffering and damage he was wrecking on people's lives. In Charlottesville, the federal jury awarded victims of violence from the 2017 Charlottesville riot more than $25 million on Tuesday, after finding prominent white supremacist leaders and groups liable under state law for injuries suffered during a torchlight march and the Unite the Right event. Good. Good. The people that were mowed down by that car and by that violence inspired by those leaders. This is a tactic, I believe, that began with the trial of the Grand Klansman of the Klan some years ago. He was living at the time in Fallbrook, California. And I believe now that the good news is this tactic will be used repeatedly. I think it's a Section 1983 action. In another lawsuit yesterday, my home county of Trumbull and an adjacent county of Lake County together sued Walgreens, Walmart, and CVS pharmacies for contributing to the opioid epidemic, writing the scripts. I don't know if this is going to hold up, but they won a huge verdict in that case, and 2 state counties argued that the pharmacy chains created the public nuisance by enabling the opioid crisis. And if this stands up, those pharmacies will, of course, go out of business, because where the pills have been dispensed randomly, rascally, with indifference to repeat prescriptions of 1,000 pills and stuff like that from the pill mills areas. They knew, they should have known, they will be liable. President Biden authorized the use of the Strategic Oil Reserve yesterday to combat U.S. gasoline prices. It's a fake. 350 million barrels of oil sounds like a lot. The Strategic Oil Reserve is for dire national security emergencies. Donald Trump filled it up to the brim, and President Biden is taking out 50 million barrels to make a gesture. It may have a little tiny impact on 3 days of gas. 3 days of gas prices. That's what it is. No other nations are tapping into their oil reserves in a collective effort to bring it down. Not going to work. The kind of amount of oil we consume in the world is one of those pieces of data that nobody really knows. It's so astonishingly high. Except maybe the Secretary of the Energy, right? The Secretary of the Energy will know how much oil we consume. Let's go to her. Cut number two, Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm in the White House press yesterday. How much oil do we consume?
There are various figures about this, so I'm curious if you know, how many barrels of oil does the U.S. consume per day?
I don't have that number in front of me.
So some suggest it's about 18 million, which would suggest you're releasing less than 3 days' worth of supply from the petroleum reserve. Why is that enough?
It isn't enough. Not knowing, by the way. Not knowing how many barrels of oil the United States consumes every day. Why in the world would we believe that Secretary Granholm knows any? If Rick Perry had done that, remember Rick couldn't remember the three agencies when he himself was on painkillers? She'd be just, if it had been him, he'd be roasted on with the turkeys by now. She went on to tell us, though, be rest assured, she's got great foresight into gas prices. Cut number four.
Bottom line, how soon will Americans see prices at the pump drop, and how long do you expect that to last?
Yeah, I'm not going to make a prediction about how much and how long. What I'm saying is that this is the largest amount that we've ever done, and it won't happen tomorrow, but it'll happen over the next few weeks that people hopefully will start to see the difference.
Before the end of the year.
We're not going to see any difference because people are driving. The demand from holiday driving is going to drive gas prices up. President Biden made a speech yesterday. He laid the blame clearly on himself for closing the pipeline across the Canadian border and taking other active measures against the oil. Nope, that's not what he did. He actually didn't take responsibility for creating the oil crisis. America was energy independent when he took office. Here's who he blamed. Cut number eight.
Instead, we're taking action. The big part of the reason Americans are facing high gas prices is because oil-producing countries and large companies have not ramped up the supply of oil quickly enough to meet the demand.
Now, stop here. Do you understand that's us? We're the world's largest oil producer, or could be. The Keystone Pipeline, he shut down on day one. Remember that? That would be helpful right now, don't you think? You think that would have been helpful? No, shutting down oil drilling on public land. President Biden is refusing to take responsibility for what he and the left wing of the Democratic Party wants, which is high gas prices. That's what they want. They're getting it. They find out that you hate it, and so they're trying to blame OPEC. It won't fly. Now, Mitch McConnell, by contrast, gave a little speech at a press conference yesterday about the number one concern in America this Thanksgiving. Cut number 12.
The subject today is inflation. 90% of Americans believe inflation is the number one problem in the country. Some on the other side have described this as transitory or easily dealt with. I think all the indicators are that it's only going to get worse. Just to give you one tangible example in my state, 750,000 people in Kentucky depend on natural gas or propane to heat their homes this winter. For many of my constituents, this is a choice in some cases between putting food on the table and staying warm. This could not be a more challenging problem confronting America. And as we all
Senator
know,
McConnell is right. But you know what New York is doing to respond to this challenging crisis? They're moving to allow 800 non-citizens to vote in local elections. Now you say that's not connected. No, it's not. What are they doing? Why aren't they saving money everywhere to feed and clothe people? I know why, because they can't trust their providers. This is an Andy Newman story, the New York Times. She ran a Bronx homeless shelter. Here's what she spent millions on. Ethel Denise Perry was arrested and is accused of running during the mid-2010s a New York City nonprofit which received more than $10 million to house, feed, and provide special social services in a 100-room homeless shelter. She stole $2,394,000 of that. New York City, don't go let 800,000 non-residents become voters in your local elections. Go find where you're giving the money so that it's not getting to the poor. And my favorite headline of the domestic front, we'll do the international news when we come back. Netflix turns its attention to films it hopes everyone wants to see. Isn't that remarkable? Films that everyone wants to see. Hollywood may be waking up. You want to hear this show, so stay right where you are listening to The Hugh Hewitt Show, Thanksgiving Eve. Morning, Glory America. It is Thanksgiving Eve on Wednesday. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. Pleased to welcome Iowa State Senator Zach Nunn to the program. Good morning, Senator Nunn. Great to have you.
Thanks, Hugh. Appreciate you having me on the show this morning.
Well, your friend and my friend, John Ondrasik, told me I've got to talk to you about Task Force Argo. I learned as I investigated Task Force Argo, you are also going to be a member of Congress next year because you're running in Iowa's third, and I think you're going to win. Where is Iowa's third, State Senator Nunn?
Yeah, Hugh, it's right in the middle of the state. It's Des Moines and pretty much everything south. So it's a Trump country. It's a conservative country. But we've got a Democrat in there. So we are working hard to showcase what the Democrats have been doing in Washington, D.C., spending more time out there than they are here at home and taking care of our district. Counties.
Well, has it been redistricted? Are the maps final yet?
It has. And so it went from being a kind of lean Democrat district, and now it's a plus three district. There is an incumbent in there, so we are working hard. We have gotten out to all 21 counties in the district. We're the first person to do that. Democrat is still playing in California and New York trying to raise money. We're much more focused on winning here with Iowa. We've won against Democrat incumbents three times. The last seat was held for 60 years by a Democrat. And we won by, you know, talking to everybody and recognizing that there are Trump supporters who might not be Republican, but they're moderate Democrats, independents. You got to bring those people into the fold. And here in Iowa, this district is carried by Trump. So we're going to work very hard on both supporting folks on the Trump side of the aisle as well as our traditional farm conservatives.
People who want to follow State Senator Zach Nunn, go to Nunn for Congress on Twitter, Nunn for Congress on Twitter. What I want to talk to you, though, about, Zach, is what John Ondrasik told me about you, is your leadership role in Task Force Argo. First, tell us what Task Force Argo is, when it was formed, and your role in it.
Thanks, Hugh. So we have a team of co-founders, myself, an Air Force veteran, with multiple recon operations over Afghanistan from 2005 onward. And a colleague, Jesse Jensen, who's a Army Ranger, he did a tour in Afghanistan as well. For both of us, we had friends and interpreters and military allies who worked on the ground in Afghanistan. And when Afghanistan fell on the 31st of August, thousands of these individuals were left behind, including American citizens. And so what we did is we gathered together a group of veterans, of former intelligence officers, of everyday Americans who wanted to do more what the U.S. government was doing. And together we raised just over $2 million and started multiple aircraft. To date, we've got about six aircraft out of Afghanistan carrying American citizens who've been pre-vetted, carrying allies like our interpreters and their families, and reuniting folks who have been serving in Afghanistan with their families who were able to get out at Kabul. I'll let you know if we can't do it alone. This has been going on now for almost 4 months. We're asking volunteers, we're asking everyday Americans, carry the mantle for something that really is a U.S. government responsibility. And unfortunately, they have been AWOL in this support effort.
People wonder why President Biden's numbers have collapsed. And yeah, inflation's bad, but I think it's because he scampered out of Iowa and left Americans behind. I don't think we will ever forget that. We won't forget people falling from the plane. We will not forget Americans abandoned. So Task Force Argo is out there operating, needing help. What is the website for Task Force Argo?
Yeah, it's www.taskforceargo.com. We call it Task Force Argo in commemoration of the 1979 evacuation of Americans when Iran fell. In that case, the U.S. government was very involved. Here we are in a situation in Afghanistan where we have Afghan special forces start at the gate at Ashkaya, promised evacuation, watched that last C-17 fly out of Kabul, and we're left standing guard at the gate in a country that existed no longer. We have Taliban members actively hunting members of our team for particularly American family members, as well as we have a group of several Sisters of Mercy, Mother Teresa nuns, who are still trapped in the north. We have an aircraft ready to fly out right now. We can't get land permission in any third country to save those Americans and those religious victims. Pretty crazy.
Talk to me a little bit about who you are getting help for. Let's talk about the heroes, and then we'll talk about the villains. There are congressmen like Michael Waltz and Mike Gallagher and Senator Tom Cotton. There are members who are veterans who have been doing all they can. I don't know if you've worked with any of them, but I know their phones are still working, and they're ringing off the hook. Who has been helpful to Task Force Argo? Who are the heroes in D.C.?
Yeah, so Senator Joni Ernst has done a Herculean lift. She's a combat veteran. She served tours in the Middle East. And she has recognized we've been able to get some of her families out because she has been able to press her foot on the gas. Senator Cantwell, a Democrat out of Washington State, has helped write a letter asking the State Department to ask questions. Where are we supposed to evacuate American citizens right now if the State Department doesn't have a lead? We have, as you highlighted, Senator Cotton, Senator Congressman Crenshaw. We also have some great help in Navy fighter pilot Mike Garcia. Congressman Garcia out of California has done a huge lean forward in this. And has really been one of those people who's saying, let's help get Americans out, but let's make sure we're also resettling our Afghan allies when they come to the U.S. Here's the point. These folks have advanced degrees that the U.S. paid for. These folks speak English. These folks have been fighting, some of them, for 9 combat deployments with U.S. forces on the ground in Afghanistan. These are about the best Americans you're going to meet on any main street here in Iowa or in any town in California. So it would be a shame not only to leave them behind, but to throw away that investment, in some cases, in a human weapon system, our special forces guy, or a very advanced degree like electrical engineering that could help us here in the U.S. where we not only have shortages, but these are folks who are going to be allies to us going forward. So D.C. to Kabul, we've got allies out there.
I'm talking with Iowa State Senator Zach Nunn, one of the co-founders of Task Force Argo. Go to TaskForceArgo.com to help out. Now, you've gotten 6 plane loads of eligible people out of Afghanistan. They're all sorts. I am assuming you've got AMSETs, American citizens. I'm sure you've got legal residents. I'm sure you've got green card holders. I'm sure you've got SIV holders and SIV eligible. How many Americans, to your knowledge, are still there that want to get out, State Senator? Just American citizens, the core obligation of the United States government. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, so that was our first tenet with Task Force Argo. If we ever found an American citizen, they were going to have the first seat on the plane. We have gotten over 2,000 American citizens and their families and our LPRs out along with some of the Afghan allies. At this point, it's really a question for State Department who should be tracking the number of American citizens still abandoning the country. But for our manifest alone, we are looking at more than 2 dozen. Earlier in the week, we had 45, and we were able to settle some of those folks to be able to evacuate out of country.
And is the Taliban helping you, or are they killing the people you're trying to help?
Yeah, unfortunately, the Taliban have executed a number of the high-value individuals that we have been working with. There was just a senior member of the intelligence community, a strong ally of the United States. You know, even more frightening are the families of soldiers who are now in the United States, but their sisters, their, in some cases, wives remain home, and those are being taken as war brides for Taliban officials, as well as anybody who is former military, particularly our Afghan special forces, guys that really fought with us for our interpreters, they're being targeted for detention and, in some cases, execution.
Now, Zach Nunn, Americans have difficulty believing because it's so cruel. We're not a cruel country. We have violence. There's a lot of violence in the United States. Just look at Waukesha and the horror to your north. But we are not individually cruel in the way that the Taliban have adopted cruelty as part of their theology towards people. Do you think the American media is conveying to the American people how cruel and ruthless the Taliban are?
No, you hit the nail on the head. First of all, there's very few people still reporting from inside Afghanistan. And so most of our information comes from our network, over 150 volunteers and handlers who are working with these families who have been abandoned. We recently had, you know, safe, secure housing in remote areas where we were housing Afghans couldn't evacuate as they waited for their flight, and American citizens as well. 4 months on, the donations have started to dry up. It's no longer a news story in the media. We had to, unfortunately, turn 400 less risky people back onto the street because we just couldn't afford to pay for people indefinitely. And here's the other aspect I would say to you, because you hit the nail on the head here. This This effort has showcased some of the best parts of America. The individuals who truly not only have fought and served in Afghanistan, whether in the military or at the embassy or in a nonprofit on the ground, but our government has not stood up and accepted the financial challenge cast upon them. And so we are so incredibly grateful for the Americans who are showcasing the best of who we are every night when they get up at 11 o'clock to be on Afghan time and help these individuals out. We're asking for just a fraction of that to come from our own government.
Last question, again, Zach Nunn. You can follow all the work of this task force at taskforceargo.com. How great is the need as we enter into Thanksgiving to get people out of Afghanistan? Today, will people who contribute find their money put to good use?
Yeah, right now it is critical. That taskforceargo.com, 100% of the money goes straight to buying aircraft and sustaining individuals to be able to get to a country little bad, vetted through security, and made sure that their goods come to the United States or a third-party country. The other aspect I would say is we need to take care of our veterans. For many of the men and women who served in Afghanistan, this is opening up scars that they have long put to rest by watching the communities, the towns, the people they served with, their interpreters, being cast aside by a government that in both Afghanistan, arguably America, has not taken care of them.
And Senator Nunn, TaskForceArgo.com. Thank you, Senator. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt with Congressman Mike Gallagher from the great state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin, I'm sure, is rooting for Ohio State this Saturday at noon when they play that team up north, because Wisconsin, I think, gets to get slaughtered by Ohio State in the Big Ten Conference Championship in Indianapolis the following week. Am I right about that, Congressman Mike Gallagher?
You are right. However, in my own household, Hugh, I will confess there's a bit of controversy. You see, my wife is a Michigan grad.
And what? So this is you've told me that before. That's why you've never introduced us, right?
This is true. And at a time when America is already dangerously divided and polarized, I don't think we can afford this added source of tension.
Well, you know, the wonderful Mrs. Gallagher is young, so she might not actually remember Michigan ever winning this game. 15 of 16 of the last Ohio State and the State Up North games going to the Buckeyes. Does she have any dim recollection of ever winning?
I don't think she does, Hugh.
No, I don't think she does. Does she watch anyway, noon Saturday? Will she put herself through that?
She will put herself through that. And, you know, the Big House is a great venue for football. You got to give some respect to that. But
been there many times. I've seen the Buckeyes beat the Wolverines in the Big House. Myself, live, 1982, I think.
That's great. I was negative 2 years old for that game.
I know, and that's about the last time that Michigan came close. Now, Congressman, I want to talk to you about something, though. You know, Aaron Rodgers has a broken toe, small toe. And you know that Baker Mayfield has a non-displaced fracture of his shoulder. I have a non-displaced fracture of my big toe. So like those two quarterbacks, I'm tough and I'm playing through it. Had the toenail removed yesterday. Bad injury, but I'm playing through it. I think the Wisconsin fans and the Cleveland fans do not understand what it takes to be Baker Mayfield, Hugh Hewitt, or Aaron Rodgers. I just don't think they get it.
Hugh, I think for you to equate in any meaningful sense Baker Mayfield and Aaron Rodgers is heresy. One is Super Bowl champion and multiple time MVP, and the
he's
other
50
is
years
Baker
old.
Mayfield.
Give Baker a 10. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, is he 40? Really? Is he 40?
He's my age. He's 37.
Okay, so Baker's 25. Give him another 12 years, and we'll have five rings, buddy.
I've been listening to you say this for a few years now, but
how many years? Really. How many rings does Rodgers have?
He's got one.
One ring. One ring for all
one
that.
One going on two. One going on two.
Really? With that turf toe that he's got? You know, I'm playing through pain myself. I know what it's like. And somebody stepped on him this week, and that's he spent the next 2 days talking about that.
You know who stepped on him and who's stepping over this entire league is the refs. Okay? We need AI.
No, we can come together. We can come together.
With the refs in the NFL. Technology can obviate the need for human beings to destroy every Sunday, because this is getting ridiculous.
You know, I would be flagged for taunting every single segment I do with you if the NFL ref was in the room. I would. I'd just be. All right, let's put aside. We will join together on this Thanksgiving note of please, dear God, more referees and eyes in the sky and quicker decisions. Let the TV booth call it, because they're almost always right. the guy who's back at Network gets more feed than the TV rep in the little black box that got rain on it. And let's go to something we can agree on, tree equity. Now, I've been talking to a number of members of Congress this week. It turns out Senator Lankford wants tree equity for western Oklahoma, and Senator Cotton wants tree equity for eastern Arkansas. I don't think Wisconsin, I've been there a few times, and there's trees everywhere. I don't think you get any of the tree equity money.
Yeah, they're going to have to redistribute our trees to states like Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plains, and they don't have enough trees on those plains. So I'm going to have to dig up trees here in Wisconsin and haul them out to Lankford and all the way down to Senator Cotton as well, because clearly this is an injustice, the fact that Wisconsin has more trees than these other states. And
there's only one way to get the tree equity, Congressman. You know what that is in your heart. You already know what the answer. Cut down all the trees, and then we will all the same number of trees.
That's right. This is where the modern woke progressivism eventually leads. And I know we joke about it at times because it is so absurd, but it's incredibly destructive for the country. And it's not just the waste of money and the lack of resources that need to be invested in things like American shipyards and the entire modernization of the American military at a time when the Chinese military is outpacing us. I think it's a lot of misguided policies that are going to further divide Americans along racial lines, quite frankly. I mean, you know, in Wisconsin, obviously this week we're dealing with a tragedy in Waukesha. I mean, it's absolutely horrific. It's the worst thing you can imagine. But while the reports are still early in terms of the motivation and the details surrounding this, it is true to say that for too long we've had a soft-on-crime DA in the Milwaukee area, and we've had insufficient bail policies. And I just bring that up to say if you examine a lot of these bills, not only do they have frivolous use of money, they also have they also continue this progressive push to make American neighborhoods less safe, to make the southern border less safe, and to do a lot of things that are at odds with what common sense Americans want right now. So this is a very dangerous moment for our country. We have to do everything we can to push back. It's not enough to sit back on our laurels and just expect the red wave to wash over us all. We have to work every single day in order to win the trust of the American people. But right now is a very critical and dangerous moment, and I fear that you're seeing the results, whether it's in your electricity bill every month or whether it's just in your neighborhood getting less safe because of this anti-cop rhetoric that we've seen relentlessly from the American left.
You know, Congressman, in Wisconsin, this is deadly serious, and I mean that literally in the case of Waukesha and in the case of Kenosha. We have two cases. Kyle Rittenhouse acquitted of the charges of first-degree murder. Doesn't mean he's innocent of recklessness, doesn't mean he's innocent of everything. It means he's innocent of first-degree murder, and he was so found by the due process accorded to him by the American and the Wisconsin Constitution. The left went nuts. They, as the great columnist over at the Washington Post, Gerard Baker, pointed out, revolutionary justice doesn't concern itself with process. They want the people they don't like dead, and they want Rittenhouse dead. Then we turn over to revolutionary justice at work in Milwaukee, where $1,000 bail sprung the killer who mowed down 60 people. 60 people are injured, 6 are dead, including a child who died last night. Many hundreds traumatized and thousands. So in your one state, normal, cheesy, Green Bay Packerish Wisconsin, you've got these two implosions of identity politics and bad policing resulting in national stories, and it's got nothing to do with real Wisconsin. I mean, these are just, I'm so actually distressed by the idea that people think Wisconsin is other than dairy farms and nice people. It is. It's dairy farms and cheeseheads, and we've got these two cities. How are you reacting with your members and your colleagues as these two major controversies unfolded? One is a killing spree, and the other is a series of events that led to 3 dead people. And what do you say to your colleagues about Wisconsin? This is not Wisconsin.
Well, to go back to Kenosha, I think it's hard for people to understand what a shock to the system that was in Wisconsin. I mean, in Wisconsin, certainly in my neck of the woods, we're about 2.5 hours north of Kenosha. I mean, we have great relations between the community and law enforcement. I mean, people know, you know, sheriffs and sheriff's deputies by their names. It's just never been an issue. So for something like that to happen to a major city in Wisconsin was absolutely shocking. And then for our governor and lieutenant governor to immediately throw the cops under the bus and also misguidedly refuse the offer initially of enhanced National Guard support from then President Trump was even more shocking. They threw fuel on the fire, and that's why you had even liberal newspapers down in Kenosha denouncing our Democratic governor. And then the final thing is to see the way in which the American media establishment has just piled on this with all sorts of bad takes on the issue. It's further inflaming tensions in a state where those tensions didn't really exist prior to this. And for Democratic politicians, like the head of the DCCC went out there and tied the Rittenhouse verdict to what happened with Jacob Blake. And he said Jacob Blake was an unarmed man who was unjustly killed by law enforcement. Well, there's at least two problems with that. Jacob Blake was armed. He had a knife. And if you charge the cops with a knife, I don't care what the color of your skin is, you're likely to get shot. And two, he was not killed. So the Democrats can't even get their facts straight when talking about this case. And then what happened in Waukesha is just an absolute tragedy, and I think a reminder of how dangerous it is to be soft on crime. So I think it's having the practical effect of waking a lot of Wisconsinites up to the dangers of the woke ideology, but we got a long way to go because this is such a big shock to our system here in Wisconsin.
Now, Congressman, I believe that all of this is going to manifest itself as it did in Virginia at the ballot box. I believe legally there will be a revulsion and a rejection of the Democratic Party because it has been taken over by Rashida Tlaib, who Jonathan Swan, you know, confronted and said, you know, you voted for a bill to let everyone out of federal prison over 10 years. And she tried to back away, but that was her bill. She wanted everybody out. And it's just nonsense. It's crazy. The woke left is nuts. And I think we're going to find that out. First, tell me, is the Wisconsin redistricting map finished?
It's not. We offered our maps, and the state legislatures offered theirs. The governor rejected those maps. He had put in place a quote-unquote nonpartisan commission that failed to come up with an acceptable map and had highly partisan maps. So now it's going to be decided by the courts. I would expect that there won't be too many radical changes to the maps. However, but it's still not yet finalized in Wisconsin.
Did you pick up a seat, or is Wisconsin the same, or did it lose one?
We're the same. However, politically, I think we're almost guaranteed to pick up a seat in the congressional delegation in western Wisconsin. Ron Kind is retiring, presumably because he sees the writing on the wall. We have a great candidate, Derek Van Orden, Navy SEAL, who's running his kicking butt. He almost won last time, and so we're going to go. We're going to add a Republican to the delegation in this election.
And have we heard from Senator Johnson, last question yet, on whether he's running for reelection?
We have not. He said his decision is going to come soon, but we don't know. I think he's genuinely undecided.
Well, if he retires, and I think it's time, he did make a pledge he would retire. I don't like it when people pledge to retire after two terms and don't. I'm going to urge you, despite your misbegotten football ways, to take the challenge and run. So we'll talk about that when that decision comes down. Congressman, happy Thanksgiving to that fan of yours and your entire family who roots for the state up north. May her Saturday be gloomy, but may your Thursday be bright.
Thank you, Hugh.
Thank you, Congressman. Time to remind you about ReliefFactor.com. Didn't ask Mike Gallagher if he actually plays touch football. He is the slowest member of the Wisconsin delegation, as far as I can tell, who runs in the annual congressional race. I believe he has the slowest time of Wisconsinites running in that. He needs ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started. For the minor aches and pains that come with touch football Thursday. Tomorrow, a lot of you playing touch football. A lot of you will be hurt. I played a touch football game at the beach with the in-laws and ended up hurt. And now I've got the broken toe and the, you know, ReliefFactor.com helps with stuff like this. Go get it. $19.95 is the starter pack. 3-week trial supply. I met with the doctor who founded this. He really did do the science. He really did do the work. And it really does work. ReliefFactor.com. $19.95, 3-week starter pack. Westbury is next. We'll talk about Powell going to the Fed on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you so much for listening. Brian Westbury is our go-to economist from First Trust Portfolio in Chicago. This was a big week in Fed news. Brian follows the Fed, and he is perennially awake, which I am amazed because he follows the Fed. Jerome Powell's going back to the Fed. I am both relieved and not relieved. But it's better than what it could have been, Brian. But what do you think of the move?
Yeah, well, it is better than what it could have been. Jerome Powell is led the Fed this far. I think he's created inflation, but at least the Fed is moving toward tapering, which means buying fewer bonds every month. They shouldn't be buying any, by the way. And then they will raise rates late next year, early 2023. I was amazed that he was reappointed because my feeling was that him talking about tapering, Jerome Powell, that is, and Jerome Powell saying he wanted to raise rates, I thought that would get him canned.
Well, raising rates certainly didn't do it. It surprised the market, too, and it had a minor sell-off, not a big sell-off, yep. But it wanted easy money forever, because investors do. They know that inflation is good for stocks. Everyone with their equity money in says, oh, sure, print more money, my stocks will go up. You know, Brian, when we were together in Atlanta, you explained to people, we have 130% more money in the system than we did 2 years ago, and less of the same number of goods. I read an extended piece this week that the former National Security Advisor, Ambassador Robert O'Brien, sent to me about, we're just not producing what we produced 2 years ago because of COVID. And we have 130% more money. Of course we're going to have inflation. And by the way, it's not 6%. It's double digits, according to this analyst.
Yep, that's exactly right. We did the worst combination of policies that you could do for a market-based system to create wealth in the past 24 months. By shutting down the economy, locking down, we destroyed information, supply chains, you know, because supply chains are just information. I mean, you think about it. There are rock-rib truck drivers in America who are driving across the country to bring liberals in New York City whatever they want. They don't know them. And if these liberals knew a conservative was bringing the truck to New York, maybe they wouldn't want it. I don't know. But when you turn all of that off and people change careers, you stop building as many parts, we're out of semiconductors, you cannot turn it back on. And then when you goose it with all that extra money, no wonder we have ports, you know, ships sitting everywhere in the ocean. We're jamming more demand through a system that we've destroyed the supply chain of.
Now, there's a funnel. And there's a funnel that was built for 100% of the money that was circulating 2 years ago, and we added 30% of the water to the funnel, and it's coming through at the same space. No surprise. I got to ask you about this headline, Brian. It's from Yahoo News this morning. Black Friday. There will be fewer markdowns amid supply chain issues, analysts explained. Well, of course there aren't going to be markdowns. They got to mark up stuff. It costs more.
Yep, the dollar store is the dollar and quarter store now. Stop on that.
Explain that to people, because that's the kind of story that breaks through.
Yeah, the dollar store, they tried to, you know, obviously they wanted to sell items at a dollar. Well, they've now said we can't do it. We're going to be the dollar plus store. And yeah. I don't know if they're going to change their name. But the prices of things are now a dollar and a quarter instead of a dollar.
Everything in the store went up 25%, right? Everything in the store went up 25%.
Yep.
Everything.
That's what happens when you print 30% more money. I mean,
I read
house prices.
I read a story about retailers are packaging things differently to trick you into not noticing their price hikes. They make you think that buying more of something is cheaper, but they haven't actually reduced the price, and they've lowered the size of each individual container. retailers are smart, right? They're not going to lose money with every sale or they won't be in business. There's just no way around this, Brian. What is the end game? How do we get out of this?
Yeah, well, it's not what happened yesterday. The president gave a talk on the economy. He said, I mean, if you listen to the president yesterday, what he is describing is a global socialist system of government trying to get you energy and gas and oil and heating fuel we're going to push the prices down because we're going to work with Japan and China and OPEC and that's not the answer. Socialism is not the answer. Markets are the answer.
And they have always been, and we know it, and we are in for a disaster, and we are in the middle of a disaster because of it. Brian Westbury, your clarity is appreciated. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, Brian. Thank you so much for bringing sweet rhythm and sweet reason to the Hugh Hewitt Show every week as we talk econ with Brian Westbury at First Trust Portfolio. Come back, hour number three on Thanksgiving Eve. Thanksgiving Eve. Christmas music next week, America, on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. It is that week. It is the game. And if you want to get ready for the game, normally my guest, Doug LaMaurice, is here to talk about the College Football Survivor podcast. The College Football Survivor podcast is must listening for every college football fan. But if you want to learn about the game, yesterday Doug and Steven and Nathan dropped a hour and 41 minute podcast that is among the Hall of Fame podcasts. It is the history of the game from the eyes of three people who are doing it from the perspective of Ohio State fans. The villains and the heroes. It was just a wonderful podcast. I'm holding in my hand Doug's new book, The Road to Ohio State. If you're watching on the Salem News Channel, this is a Christmas present for everyone in your life who got any scarlet and gray in their veins. The Road to Ohio State is the best Christmas present, in fact, other than another win on Saturday. Doug LaMaurice, happy Thanksgiving Eve. Thanks for joining me today. Working on the day before a holiday and a day before a crazy weekend, my hat is off to you.
Oh, this is my wife's birthday, as always, this week. It's Thanksgiving week, and it's the Ohio State-Michigan game. This is a wonderfully busy time of the year.
You know, the fetching Mrs. Hewitt, as I refer to her, doesn't care anything about sports, nothing. She just takes Sundays off and Saturdays off from our marriage when the football season's on. Is Mrs. LaMaurice a football fan?
She has come around to football interest, perhaps not fandom, but when it's in your house 365 days a year, she doesn't roll her eyes anymore. She at least is maybe interested in what's going on.
You're better than I, man. You're better off than I am, but I've only been married 39 years. I'm working on it. Doug, first let me begin with that podcast. That was epic. Why didn't you name Tom Darden as one of the villains? Because he became a Brown?
Well, I will tell you, there is that crossover, right, Hugh, that there have been multiple, you know, sort of Michigan players who have found their way to Cleveland. And I think it does test the fortitude of Cleveland Browns fans sometimes when they have this guy that they didn't like and now all of a sudden they like him. So, you know what? It's a great rivalry, 117 years. I didn't want to put too much on our listeners to try to sort through everybody, but the list could probably go 50 deep.
It's a great podcast. Buckeye Talk. How many people listen to that? Is that the most successful college football podcast in America?
We have multiple thousands of people who are listening every day, 5 days a week, that I doubt it is the most successful, but sometimes you can find your audience with your local team, right? I mean, I do the national show, but people love their team the most. And I think we have a really loyal group that they roll with us, and we appreciate them.
Well, Nathan and Stephen are great. Let's turn now to College Football Survivor Podcast, which is also available Tuesdays and Wednesdays. You subscribe to them different ways. Leave a comment. They're all good. Look, you called this month ago that we would end up with two SEC teams and two Ohio teams. And it looks like we're going that way if everybody wins out, right?
It's going to be interesting what happens with Alabama and Georgia, because they are going to play in the SEC championship game in 2 weeks. If Bama upsets Georgia, both teams will make the playoffs. If Georgia beats Alabama, and Alabama now has two losses, they still have a chance to get in with two losses because they have so much respect. But there are other teams positioning themselves, especially the two teams in Oklahoma this weekend who are playing each other. So, not a guarantee to get two SEC teams, but the Ohio teams, I think, are in pretty good shape.
Now, Doug, the most important game last week, as you said, was Michigan State-Ohio State. And I've never seen a perfect half of football. Nobody has. But that's pretty much close, because the defense gave up 0 points and the Ohio State offense was Darth Vader split wide and every other football nemesis. I mean, it was remarkable. What did you think as it unfolded in front of you?
Yeah, I was getting a lot of questions like that, Hugh. Like, is that the best half of Ohio State football you've ever seen? And there's some good candidates up there. I still go back to when Ohio State beat Clemson in the national semifinal last year and scored 35 in the first half because the competition was better. But this was still a top-10 team in Michigan State, and that was a young quarterback, Hugh. C.J. Stroud, first-year starter, second-year player, really mastering his craft, is the way that I said it. He has great players around him. We know that. But he was in complete control. And to just come out, and he played one half and one more drive, and he threw six touchdown passes in that amount of time. It was pretty close to offensive perfection, and I think it gets this Ohio State offense, at its best, back in a conversation among the best college offenses we've seen in the last decade or so.
You know, your colleagues, Shahan and Nathan, they both approach Cincinnati different ways. Shahan is rooting for them, and Nathan is obliged by his AP vote. He's a very Hugh Hewitt kind of approach to things, which is they beat Notre Dame can't go in ahead of them. Oregon should be ranked above Ohio State. I listen to every podcast. They're very distinct personalities. What do you think of the Cincinnati Bearcats? I mean, honest to goodness, they're not Alabama. You can't. It's crazy. If you put people under cross-examination and make them subject to perjury, no one's going to get on the stand and say Cincinnati would beat Alabama, would they?
Probably not, but there is. It becomes the distinction, Hugh, right, of most deserving versus best. And if we're talking Vegas betting line and who would win in a parking lot, you know, that's not exactly what sports is, right? That sometimes, you know, you have sort of silos that you're in, and you have to beat the teams around you, and then if you do that, you advance. But I do think this Cincinnati team has multiple players who are going to play in the NFL. They do have a win over Notre Dame that is better than any win that Alabama has this year. And I do think things like that come into consideration. It's hard to tell with Bama, Hugh. They have the greatest coach in college football history, and they recruit the best players every year. So you can think to yourself, well, they're automatically the best team. But, you know, their best receiver transferred from Ohio State because he wasn't going to get on the field at Ohio State this year. So, I mean, there are some things. It's not that Alabama's not good. They are good. But Cincinnati, they have a great quarterback. They have an NFL defensive end. They have one of the very best cornerbacks in all of football. They have a running back who used to play at Alabama. Cincinnati is pretty darn good, and it took me a while to come around on them. Hugh, I wasn't there with Cincinnati last year, but I am with them this year, and if they get in, and I think they will, I think they will be competitive in the playoff. I don't think they're going there to get their doors blown off.
No, I want to note one quick dissent. I think the greatest football coach in college today is Urban Meyer, who's coaching the Jaguars now, for reasons that we could spend a whole hour on versus Nick Saban, but I just want to note my dissent. I want to move on to one question and then move to the pros. Luke Fickell is the former Ohio State interim coach, now down at Cincinnati. USC needs someone to lead them out of the wilderness and with them West Coast football. I think Luke Fickell, being a Buckeye, an Ohio guy, a Midwestern guy, be a tough transition culturally, but he's what USC needs. Clean, squeaky clean, charismatic, and a recruiter. What do you think about Fickell at USC?
So a lot of people connect those dots because the athletic director at USC is the former athletic director at Cincinnati that hired Luke Fickell. So there's a personal connection, and when you're a coach, who you work for really matters. The hard thing about Luke, I sat down in his home with Luke and his wife when he was in his last year at Ohio State, and we talked about his desire to be a head coach. He has a lot of kids. They care about the aunts and the uncles and the cousins and the grandparents. He has never really been outside the state of Ohio as a coach. He has a great, perfect family and professional fit right here. Cincinnati is going to the Big 12 in a couple years, which means they will be in one of the very best conferences. He's such a Midwest guy. I wonder about it, Hugh. He was very circumspect. He stayed at Ohio State for 15 years as an assistant. He had chances for other jobs and didn't take them. I think he stays at Cincinnati, and if he ever jumps, it is to a school like Notre Dame, Penn State, or if Ohio State ever comes open down the line. I just don't know from a personal perspective if I see him going to L.A.
You know, I am a Buckeye guy. I'm a Midwestern guy, Doug, and I named my youngest son's middle name is Ohio for a reason, but I still went to California for 30 years, and they need him. The college football West Coast needs a Luke Fickell-like person because they are lost, not only on the field, but culturally, he's right for them. Now I want to turn to Baker because we got 1 minute. I love Baker Mayfield. I want him there for 25 years. He took a shot at the press. He took a shot at Dan Lobby, who might be the nicest guy I've ever heard on the radio, saying, I don't owe you guys anything. Yes, he does. I wrote a column about this for the Post. It'll come out on Monday. What did you think about that comment?
You don't owe journalists things, but you owe fans things. And journalists are conduits for the fans. So
yes.
The fans make sports what they are. It's how you make your money. It's why sports are fun. It wouldn't be very fun if you played in an empty stadium for free. So
that,
he's frustrated. I get it. But it wasn't exactly the right thing to say.
It wasn't. Doug, you've been a trooper this year. Keep coming back. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I look forward to all of your podcasts, Orange and Brown Talk, Buckeye Talk, College Football Survivor podcast. And don't forget the Road to Ohio State for your Christmas shopping list. Stay tuned, America. I'll be right back on the Wednesday Eve, Thanksgiving Eve edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.